There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Squeaking chair.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I've got the crack here.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to ask you for years.
Have you?
Who have we got on the cover there, if you can remember?
Well, Jimmy Percy.
Yeah.
Johnny Rotten, Johnny Lydon.
Nice. Is that the astrologist down there?
Yeah, Patrick Moore.
Sir Patrick Moore.
John Peel.
Oh, that's Peel. I thought that might have been Clapton. That's Peel there.
No. Love Clapton. It. There's no way that Eric Clapton would be on that cover. That's Simon Draper.
Did you have to ask permission to have, like, caricatures?
No. Well, no. We didn't ask. That's Simon Draper, who used to be the head of A&R at Virgin Records. Mick Glossop, he produced a record. This is Manor, who was our roadie at the time and sings on Sus.
Is he flipping the bird or has he just got his hand in the air?
No, he's actually he's got an afro, so he's,
oh, so he's doing
an
little
afro
comb.
Malcolm, of course, Paul, me, believe it or not, Ruffy, Gary Bushell.
Yeah, we were talking about him a moment ago, actually.
Derek and Clive, or Pete and Dudley Moore.
Yeah,
Peter Cook,
brilliant.
Moore. That's Keith Richard with a unlikely suspecting girlfriend. Rat Scabies, Captain Sensible.
Brilliant.
This is Rocky, who was Malcolm's wife. Jimi Hendrix, Charlie Watts, Illy Pipper, who was our dog, who's Ruffy's dog. And, people think the others are just sort of characters, as far as I know. This is Diane, who had to be in there, who was just, you know, the artist of Gary Bushell, did I say that? That's about it, as far as I know.
Amazing.
I don't have a sort of a numbered thing of them, but that's the people I know. Because basically, we just said we wanted to have a party because we liked partying. And, party with all our favourite people. And John said, yeah, I'll paint that, because he was a bit of a great artist and a bit of a forger at times. So we just gave him pictures of all the people we wanted on it, and he just sort of made up the rest.
It's amazing. Piece of it's art. Great. And 40 years, isn't it, next year?
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And that's just so strange. That's just so strange. There's a sort of character in him. I don't know who that is, in the mirror.
Yeah, looming shadily.
Yeah. So I think we're going to study this more and more.
Are you going to do anything? I was chatting to Ruffy and he sort of didn't give me a precise answer, but are you going to do anything on the release front to mark the anniversary? Obviously, you're
doing it's a bit tricky because, after all these years, Virgin, or whatever that's become, still own it.
Right.
We didn't earn any money from it, and I'm not going to go off on one about miserable.
As was the case for so many bands back then, right?
Yeah, but the only thing I'm slightly sad about is that, you know, they released a box set. I mean, you know, this is art, really, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, the only reason we continue, really, is because of art. And, you know, people can look from the outside and go, oh, they've reformed for money and everything, but I can guarantee that I make more money as a gardener, really, which I'm training up now. it's a little bit disconcerting sometimes when, you know, you do get excited about your own music again and what you're doing, and you sort of go, oh yeah, but great, we could do this. We, you know, we called our label Sasumi Records because basically we looked at Amazon and it was 23 Ruts releases and we've only really made 1.5 like originally. And you think, well, who's getting all this money? Who?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Probably not much
it?
Money. You look at this after you've. And then every time we've gone after any sort of contractual thing, because we had a bad contract, it always ends in just being miserable, really, because you can't do anything. You can't get it back. And, you know, it's just sort of ridiculous. So when they did the box set, they decided to do the box set, they called us up and said, the guy that was putting it together, who's a nice guy, said, yeah, look, you know, do you want to get involved in doing some sleeve notes? And we said, well, can we have some records to sell? And they said, well, no, you know, you can have 10% discount off of...
Discount?
10% discount off of retail. So basically, a little bit more, they sell it into the shops, which is nothing.
Yeah.
We said, well, why would we get involved in? And but actually, we did get involved because at that time of the box set, we got an advert for the book. We got our website up there. So it's all been part of the master plan. This time, we've got new management now. Well, the first management since... 1979.
Yeah.
And
booking agent and
new
engineer.
And, you know, the first thing he did was try and resecure this so we could release it ourselves, make a nice, I mean, everybody's got it really, but if we're involved, we could have done some things, put some stuff. So,
is there any unheard, unreleased music
not really. I mean, although somebody's dug some out, but you know, I think something will come out, but we wanted to do it ourselves. And, you know, not about making money, but just have it and make. We wanted to make 1,000 vinyls and they just wouldn't give it back to us because they just think, because now really the music industry, as you know, it's always been rubbish anyway. But not rubbish, but
yeah,
terrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, they just really, they've got someone in re-release department that just goes through and just fine tooth comb. But, you know, you're a music fan and. Do you go through, the classic records are the classic records. Do you go through and want another version of that with yet another unreleased remix or rough mix? It's a bit boring unless we can find something really good.
So it is, but for me, it's about the packaging. And you could do something so special with the packaging of an album like that.
I mean,
we're working on it,
but we don't have the rights. So therefore, it becomes a little bit, you think, well, why should I do this?
Yeah,
they've already said, oh, how many do you want? And we've said, well, none, unless you give it to us. Unless, you know, well, why should we sell it on? Because the thing is, this day and age, music don't sell, but it does sell at the gigs. So we're doing the gigs. So why should we sell their product? They're not going to give us whatever. It's just pointless. So I really hope none of you guys are bootlegging. So we'll see. I mean, there is a guy, he seems to be putting stuff together and he's got a few unreleased tracks. And we'll just try and keep it as, as cool as we can, really. Because there's no point in us doing anything just for money, really, because it's just pointless. So we do it and try and keep our integrity and we shall carry on doing it. So.
And the shows you must be... particularly excited about doing and revisiting some of those songs, which I assume you haven't played in 40-odd years.
It's a very, very weird one. I mean, it's, I was very dubious about, I never thought we'd be doing this. I mean, never thought we'd be alive for a start, but now here we are 40 years. But as you know, the history, we've come back recently. We've made a new Ruts DC album.
I love, by the way.
And that's great.
It's incredible.
And we've moved forward. So we're moving forward. So this is, we're going to do this, but it's like, there's only one way to do it, really, if it's a bridge to the future. Because we're doing this tour, we've had to take some time off from touring because we haven't stopped touring.
Yeah.
Or gigging.
Because it's how you make your money, right? On the road.
Well, yeah. And it's fun.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
exhausting, but it's also what you do.
Yeah.
And why you do it. And I like to think, no, I don't want to do this anymore. But then I just sort of start to become really miserable.
Yeah,
you really miss that adrenaline thing and everything. So, but I mean, I think as an overall concept, it's 40th anniversary. I'm not Malcolm Owens. I'm not. We never reformed the Ruts, and we reformed Ruts DC because we're proud of that. But we'll never use the word Ruts because Malcolm was a singer in the Ruts. So this subject's bound to come up. But I've been doing like 5 or 6 of those songs in our set, maybe 7. And so I've got used to it. We've made them our own. So now there's the songs we haven't been doing. And we kind of just thought, well, let's run them through in rehearsal. And of course, we're kind of bigger lads and got a lot more power. And we've been playing loads. So, because remember, the Ruts were only really about 1.5 years, 2 years, really. It was a very short-lived thing. Now, here we are 40 years later, and we've been doing this particular brand of Ruts DC for 5-6 years, at least. So when we played something like Human Punk, yes, we are going to play it. It's a song that, well, particularly Ruffy never really wanted to play, but listen to it, and then we just banged into it in rehearsal, and it sounded amazing, you know. I can't comment on the vocals, of course, but the band sounded really good.
What kind of memories come back?
What's that?
What kind of memories come back?
You can't believe it, really. It's just mostly fond ones, you know, mostly fond ones. Because I think we gave it a long enough time to assimilate the grief and everything of what happened. And that's a major thing in your life, really. This Ruts DC thing, I think, the last 5 years has actually been very
cathartic, and
brilliant. Because one of the reasons is because, as I always say on stage, you know, Malcolm and Paul are always there in some form. You can't, I'm not talking about spiritually or anything else, but in my memory and Ruffy's men, because I'm singing some of Malcolm's lyrics, and you can't help but think about him. You can't help think about Paul Fox. So, in a way, it's kept them alive in my heart, which is really brilliant because we just, you know, sometimes me and Ruffy are in tears of laughter, telling stories about them two guys and experiences that we had, which is fantastic because, you know, what would have happened if I'd have just hung up my guns, as it were, and just gone, well, that was it, and never done any rap songs again. I don't think me and Ruffy would have, we're friends anyway, but
yeah,
and we've played with many people, but being out and playing those songs, the intensity of it, of the songs, is all part of that. The Ruts were great fun, but very intense on stage and very, you know, but a laugh, like, I mean, amazing laugh. So I think we're trying to do this tour, like the crack tour, with that in mind, and it's supposed to be a celebration of the album, but also a celebration of their lives. And I've seen, and their contributions to it. I mean, I've seen bands that go out and do this sort of thing, and sometimes certain members aren't mentioned, or it's like they've died, you know.
Yeah.
Well, actually, more than that, I just said, realise what I said there. Like they, well, what I mean is like they've died when they actually haven't.
Yes.
In this case, they're both dead. And,
yeah, yeah.
Got no, you know, proud of the stuff we did with them. So, going to try and make it like that. There's going to be people that are going to be upset. There's going to be people that don't think we should be doing it. There's going to be people that think we're not as good as the original band, but people say, oh, this ain't the Ruts and everything. I said, well, no, of course it's called Malcolm's eternally 26, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless we forget.
Well, that's the thing with all those people like Kurt Cobain, and, you know, they're always going to be remembered as being at the peak of their power because that's when they passed away.
I guess it's when I, growing up, it was Jimi Hendrix, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what a finer example. It's just like, well, and then
bringing
back to our re-releases, I remember that, and then I heard, you know, hearing the great albums, and then, oh, it was some unreleased Jimi Hendrix tracks, and you think, well, we found him under his bed, but he probably never ever wanted them released.
No.
You know what I mean? So it's a bit, I find that a little bit insulting sometimes.
Yeah.
But then some of them are good, so he's, you know,
hidden
probably
gems.
The stuff he'd throw away would be better than anything I know, right? So, yeah.
What was your music growing up? What first switched you on to want to be a player? Because assuming you've been doing stuff before punk came around and sort of had that igniting influence.
Ruts was my first band. You know?
Was it
so,
really?
Yeah, and that's down to Ruffy, really, because I...
so is he a couple of years older than you?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he had a record shop, which you know, and some people know. So I was really into... I mean,
funk
we
was
didn't
what
have,
I hear.
Funk, yeah, man. But my sister was 5 years older than me, and she used to play all this Scatterlights, Phoenix City, Prince Buster originals, and we'd have those in the house. So I'd sort of, we had a really little stereo radiogram. She used to listen to The Who quite a lot, and a guy across the road from us, our name was Warwick, actually, I always remember his name. lent us a couple of Who albums, and so I was really quite young. So at the pop, radio, I used to listen to Radio Luxembourg all the time. So this is 60s, 70s. Fantastic.
I'd have loved to have been a DJ on a station like that.
Yeah. And
because they were the guys, weren't they, introducing like the whole
nation. Well, introducing stuff. You couldn't even get the, you know, the reception was famously bad. And
yeah.
It was all part of it. But I remember, you know, I remember playing football over the park and hearing pictures of Lily when I got in, and it was fantastic. And but then, you know, the music that was just on the radio was fantastic. So let's start there. Everything you'd imagine, Kinks, you know, The Who. I was really, though, a kind of pop. It's just that it was good pop.
Yeah, all the pop then was I'm about sensational.
The 2.5 minute, 3 minute format. Really.
Yeah. Motown singles. Buddy Holly.
Then I went Motown, but before that, then Motown. She introduced me to Motown. I said, Motown. The singles were the thing, and I'm still in that mentality, really. And then I started on a certain path, like at the end of school, where people were starting to smoke things.
Yeah.
I had to do a crash course. So suddenly, I kind of go, oh, Black Sabbath. It's an album, and then I listened to Deep Purple, and I thought, God, you know, there's only three tracks on this side, but I've been listening to British Motown Chartbusters Volume 2, and there was like 25 tracks, you know, yeah, of short, sweet songs. But I really got into that, Deep Purple in rock and everything. So it was a bit of a crash course.
In stoner culture.
In stoner, well, I didn't know what culture it was. It was kind of, it was just I felt, you know, I needed to belong. Started growing my hair a bit, which didn't last that long, actually. And then, but the finest thing was I kind of, in the stoner culture, went around someone's house once and they were playing. So this is, we're now up to 75, 76, and they were playing some dub, you know, Garvey's Ghost, I think it was. And I thought, oh my God, is it, I'm home. You know, this is, I can get stoned and.
Yeah.
Still listen to reggae. I didn't think I was allowed, you know. So that sort of, I went back into all that stuff. So whatever music I've listened to, I've always played Prince Buster. I've always played Tamla Motown. So really, that goes right across the board. And so that brings me up to, like, I got a job. I was working for the post office in post office telephones in St. Paul's, near St. Paul's Cathedral. And I used to walk around all the record shops. So there was Harlequin Records in those days. And I was in the funk then. So I'd walk up to Berwick Street Market and I'd get all these advanced copies, old advanced copies. So all these James Brown singles, Payback and stuff like that. Got into Parliament, Funkadelic and everything like that. And bought Parliament record in Ruffy's record shop, Chocolate City, I think it was. And he had the cheapest imports. I used to walk around in my lunch hour and buy all these records. It's all about record, you know. Oh, you get this record.
Crate Digging.
Record. And then, Crate Digging, yeah. And really got on well with Ruffy and buying that. And then I went from there into, he said, have you heard this? And then I get into sort of jazz, what's it called? Yeah, jazz funk, which was a road that quickly exhausts itself. You know, I went to see a few bands. I remember just thinking, what is this?
Because it's so self-indulgent.
So self-indulgent. Yeah.
And not
some
really
nice bits.
Connection with the crowd.
Well, nothing like that. And then you sort of go, I think I went to see Larry Coryell. I even went to see Brand X with Phil Collins was playing drums and sat in there going, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, looking around.
Because not much has spoken to me yet, really. I like Larry Coryell because he used to use an echo trumpet quite a lot. And I got into effects and stuff like that through that. And that was really like, I think back to the dub music that I'd been listening to. So here we go. And then one day, thank God, I walked in. Ruffy had a beard at that time. And he had a Ramones t-shirt. There's a picture in the book about that, actually. He's got a the Ramones came out. And I walked in one day. And he said, who's that? The Ramones. And he went, here, listen to this. 1976, put it on. We both went, wow.
Which track was it? You remember?
It was Beat on the Brat with the baseball bat. It was a whole album, though, in a shop.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And in his shop, I'm sure he's spoken about this, but in his shop, you know, they were all quite record collectors and punk was a dirty word. And you know you are out there, all these old musicians, they all say they loved it now, but they hated it.
Yeah.
And
they saw it
we
like an
totally
affront.
Embraced that. And and thought this is great. As did Paul Fox, our guitarist, who I hadn't met at that point, but he just listened to it and went, he was a great guitarist, but he just went, I love this, you know, because it was like Pretty Things, and it was like some of those bands, even Awkwind, you know. So the bands we liked were kind of quite rebelly and quite rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
More biker bands, really, than prog rock, you know. Like, Yes, I just couldn't. I just what? I remember listening to one Yes album and sort of miming to the keyboard parts and then thinking, again, what am I doing? Again, I mean, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But when Ramones came along, we just went, yes, and sort of did that. And then it was just collecting singles and the jazz rock went out the window. And Parliament stayed. The good funk stayed. All the reggae stayed.
Yeah.
And then luckily, the way it went was, you know, you could go out. And then basically the Ruts sort of formed and did a few impromptu gigs at a Target in Northolt, which is now McDonald's on the A40, and Ruffy played bass. I was there and I was sort of hanging around. I was sort of had long hair, and I was there at inverted commas roadie, which basically meant, well, I said I could solder leads, but I couldn't really. I did, but
you were there to bring the vibe.
Bring the vibe, yeah. And roll some joints. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, I suppose we can say that these days.
Yeah,
everybody smokes, but yeah, do a bit of that. But we were stoners, but it was always really, really positive. And yeah, so that was that. That was and then they sort of went, oh, actually, this just sounds really good. They did their first demo. I was there for that, and that was with Angel, a guy called Angel Nyer, who you still see now. A black guy from Dominica, and he was producing this in Orange Studios, not far from here, Eddie Kidd record called Black Leather and Silver Chrome. And the B-side was Hold Me Closer. And Andrew said, you can sing, you can do the guy vocal because he's not here yet. And so suddenly it was the Ruts playing, you know, some of them, not all the Ruts, it was Matt Martin, but Paul Fox was definitely playing. I think Ruffy was definitely playing. And they were recording that record, and they recorded the B-side, and I did the guide vocal on it.
Amazing.
So that was the first time.
So you're like Booker T and the MGs, studio house band, yeah.
Yeah, kind of really weird. I think it was a rubbish vocal, but nonetheless. As Angel said now, you know, I always knew you had it. But I don't think I did. But hey, there you go. So that's that story. There was no turning. And the next minute they said, look, okay, Ruffy said, look, I, we're going to take this seriously. I don't want to be in bass anymore. And the drummer said, well, I want to get back into my funk. So Ruffy said, well, let's get Segs on bass. And so I did it I had to go for an audition, which incurred just like more smoking.
And, yeah.
And sort of learning a bass line or two from Paul Fox, who was a great teacher. And that was it. Next minute, we're doing a gig with Wayne County, you know, supporting Wayne County on ATV.
And so it was Wayne, not Jane at that point.
It was Wayne, yeah. And he came.
What a wild man. What a great artist.
Very strange when you're in a toilet and he comes in for Waz beside you. You know, it's like he'd already had that record, you know, yeah. You don't want to. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And there he goes, sort of saying, all right, beside me, you know, in the male toilet. So what a story. I mean, what was I then? I guess I was 20 or 21. So it was like, bloody hell.
What an exciting time.
Really exciting time. And I kind of blame that gig for, I don't say I've got a drink problem, but no, all people drink. But I mean, I didn't know what to do. I was so nervous. And someone said, well, have half a Guinness. So
take
I had half
job.
A Guinness and then I had another half a Guinness and I never looked back really. I think I've only done one gig sober in my life.
Really. Have you?
Totally sober.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's because I'd been out drinking with Pete Townsend all night. So I don't know if you
That'll do it.
So, yeah, so I met a lot of good people along the way. Some idols that kind of didn't let us down and some people that you thought were cool but actually weren't, you know,
yeah.
So. But that, I guess we come across like that now. It's 40 years. It's sort of weird, isn't it?
It's mad.
I still like quite.
I just found out you did stuff on the Chemical Brothers records.
I
never
did.
Knew that.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I'm quite. Yeah. And that's due basically down to Steve Dubb Jones, because he was there. He was 19. I met him doing this kind of strange hip hop record, because I was working with, I used to do some beats and stuff like that. I always used to embrace, used to do a bit of programming and just whatever you got studio in your house.
Well, Ruffy was talking about Acid House earlier, and I guess you guys have always embraced those new movements.
Totally, because what are you going to do? I mean, it's just about, if you like dancing, then make some dance music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we never really did it as a sort of to make money, once again. But, inevitably the two meet again and you start playing live bass on it or guitar or whatever. You just do what you do, just musicians at the end of the day. And then I met Dubby, and then he didn't have anywhere to live, so he came and stayed in my council place in the spare room that famously the window was broken, he was freezing. And again, we used to get up in the morning, we had these two Celestion Ditton speakers, I think that Ruffy had lent us. And we used to get up in the morning and just listen to, I mean, he was 19, 20, so we used to have all these, we used to put it on the deck and just listen, play all these singles that I'd got. He'd go, wow, and then we just have music listening sessions, you know, proper old school, really.
Do you still do that now?
I've just set up, I ended up in a studio flat in Brixton Way, so I didn't have much room, and I kept getting complaints. So
what about the noise?
Yeah, not a lot, but I had little, you know, the little Bose, you know, Bluetooth, and it was really quiet. It was just too loud for everyone. But I've moved now, Wimbledon Way, and I've got more room, and I've just dug out my old JBL speakers. I've set them up, set the deck up, and yeah, I was just off. I was there for about 14 hours. People were coming around. I ended up lying on the floor. I just see how it sounds down there at 3 o'clock in the morning, playing your own faves and just sort of getting the speakers right, tweaking the where they position, just enjoying it.
Nothing beats it for me.
I think my missus came down and I was face down, asleep. She thought I had a heart
Tunes
attack.
Tunes rocking.
She thought She thought I had a heart attack. You know, with
what a way to go.
No, but. Yeah, I hadn't though. I was still alive to tell the tale. So, so I still do that. I mean, people don't do that. And I think I posted on Instagram, look, do yourself a favour. Don't forget. I know everyone listens to earbuds and stuff. I'm a bit deaf, so it doesn't do it for me. I like the bass, you know, and it doesn't have to be banging. I don't want a car that rattles the high street windows, because I find that a little bit, crass.
Yes.
But
like people
a little
who
bit
play
of,
music
you know,
on their phones
good,
on the bus.
Some good bass, you sort of need it, because we get it on the stage all the time. But, I mean, a lot of people, you know, you end up listening to stuff on your... Someone sent me a YouTube thing of us at Rebellion the other day, and all I heard was the vocals being a little bit out of tune, so I turned it off.
Yeah.
But someone said, no, you've got to listen to it with the bass and everything, because, you know, you listen to... A lot of people do that. You listen to it on your... laptop speakers, which is quite a common thing. They sound great, but you're not getting the full spectrum of the sound that the people making that record have probably put into it. So
especially with a band like you guys.
Well, or anything reggae based, you know what I mean? I'm slapping myself on the wrist. I'm not slapping anyone else. I'm just saying, from time to time, it's worth plugging in, checking a bit of bass.
Crank
out.
Up the bass, man.
Yeah, crank up the bass.
Tell me about Jar War.
Yeah, what about it?
I want to know about that song, what it's about, and the writing of it.
Well, the Southall riots. Southall. Malcolm used to live in Hayes. Foxy didn't live far away. We used to be over there quite a lot, and we used to do a few gigs with a band called Misty and Roots. Very, yeah. I want to use the word militant, but it's not. Particularly the right word, it's more roots, that's what they call roots. It's just rebel music. So when you say someone's militant, it conjures up all sitting around plotting to take down a government. But what it is taking down the government by joy and love and music, really. That's where we've always
opening
been coming from.
Opening people's hearts up in their
minds. Yeah, you know, in that way. And if you can slot a few lyrics in under the beauty of the music that can wake people up a bit, then great. Still trying to do that now. Misty used to sort of do that. We started off with Misty just because we knew Chris Bolton, this guy called Chris Bolton, used to be the white manager, and Clemens Baker used to be the black manager. So they said that we should do some gigs together. Malcolm said, yeah. So we started off like real, like going in the back of a truck with them. And well, we started off just doing gigs, and there'd be a big dressing room. They'd be down one end playing dominoes. We were up the other end with our sort of getting drunk. And then we'd go and play. And then if you had a sort of stock frame of it, you'd sort of see, you know, just be intermingling over the next year. And in the end, we always said they sort of got more and more into Rastafari, so that, you know, there'd be a big sort of newspaper full of weed that we were allowed to. And they may be reading from the Bible before they went on, and we'd be, you know, and some little punkettes that were there dressed in bin liners getting stoned and just giggling, you know, but they didn't mind. They just thought it was all part of it. And we used to sometimes jam at the end, and that's how the reggae thing came about, really. Which was brilliant, and still friends to this day to those that remain, you know. So we played with them at Rebellion last year, which was really great. I'm glad to say they were headlining over us, which was even better, really, you know what I mean? Because I could go to the audience afterwards and
get the job done.
So so there was all that kind of going on, but they had it was Rock Against Racism. That was the overall banner, but it wasn't just about that. They had a Raw Roots Club that they used to run at Dominion in Southall. And they also had a sort of community centre in Southall where people could go of all races and creeds and colours and well, all sexualities, which wasn't really prevalent at the time. All looking back, all sexualities. And also, may I say, certain states of mental health, you know. People forget about all this. It's so just giving somewhere, you can save someone's mental stability by giving them somewhere to go, you know. Famously, there was a National Front march there. And there was, so people, the more left wing went out and did a demonstration against it. It was over that weekend. Blair Peach famously got hit over the head by the SPG, which is a special patrol group, which was a faction of the police since disbanded for obvious reasons. But they were kind of thugs, really. And this is not an anti-police statement, but I think even some policemen would agree that there were certain thug elements that were for rioting and stuff like that. SPG was special patrol. They had certain powers, and sometimes some of them were a little bit overzealous in that. So they got hit. You know, Blair Peach got hit over the head and he died. So there was more demonstrations. And then it all kicked off. And, you know, there was agitators, there was this and that. But the basic thing was they went in and they smashed up the community centre, which was Mr. Roots' things. Clarence Baker got hit over the head and was permanently brain damaged, really. I mean, he's still alive. The keyboard player, Vernon, got smashed up and then arrested for, I think, attacking the police, which basically meant he put his hands over his head, you know, to protect himself. So the sense of injustice was just enormous, you know. And Malcolm, so we used to jam reggae, and Malcolm said, I've got this one called Jawa, and he just sang it like that. And so many of our songs, we used to just love to, we didn't used to go, nah, how should this go? There'd be a little jam, and
just
then
getting that vibe.
And then he'd just sing over it. And then you go, what about a bit, because Clarence Baker, No Trouble, mate. You know, they were kind of basically jams, and then we honed them down. So that's the story of Jawa. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody got really brought to task from the SPG or anywhere else, but some people were permanently damaged by that, you know. There are some pictures. I think Malcolm went down to the, I wasn't there, we were over South London at the time, because me and Ruff used to live south, but someone dug out some pictures the other day of Paul Fox. There's a great picture of like some white guy being held on the floor by the police, and Paul Fox is kind of pointing and shouting at him. Yeah, you know, because I've just told us, you know, I've told that story in quite a forgiving tone, if you see what I mean. But I don't really forgive that. It's just. I just think now we just have to carry on trying to educate people to try and avoid that again. And I think situations are bad, man. You know what I mean? Because one thing that the Rock Against Racism movement and everything we did at the time, bring it back to that reggae thing, was you used to be able to go, there'd be a punk band, there'd be a reggae band, or quite a lot. Talisman, Mystery and Roots, Black Enchanters, Ruts, the Mekons, all these sort of bands, the Clash, obviously you had a finger in that sort of vibe. And the good thing, you might get, well, lesser DJs, but more famous now, Don Letts or someone.
Of course,
He used to be DJing at those clubs and those places, and still does, really. And people were playing that. So you'd hear some reggae, then you'd hear this really fast punk.
And all rebel music, wasn't it?
All rebel music. No one really knew what to make of it, especially some of the black bands. But they kind of got it quite quickly because they realised that it was rebel music and that people were complaining or trying to make people aware of situations that were going on. I foolishly believed that it was a one-way journey, that I foolishly thought, like you do when you're young, that this was, that mankind was developing, you know, that it was almost like...
Awakening,
and almost like evolution, really,
yeah.
that this would go on, and that these bands would be together, and everybody would be together, and there won't be any problems anymore. But, of course, it quickly gets quashed, you know, because it's not really allowed. And unfortunately, and I'm not having a go at anyone, but communities are white, black, Asian. If you don't give them something that to unite them, they quickly rush back to their own communities, and that's the nature of humanity. I've realised now as a 62-year-old man, and thank God I've still got some black friends, Asian friends, and stuff like that. And when we do talk about it, because you don't talk about it all the time, but it's a bit of a shame that you can't really go out in those clubs anymore. That don't, not for me anyway. I mean, not just my age, but it doesn't happen so much. We go and do gigs. There's not many black people there, and the reggae gigs, there's not many white people there. We might be there. We'll be fine because, you know, no one's going to trouble us. We're like 60-year-olds in the background, you know, that obviously love their music. But, you know, I just don't think we're
segregated.
Yeah, a bit. I don't really on purpose. We're self-segregated in a way because it's quite, you know, there's not so much money about. So many other things. You don't have to go out to a club to go and listen to music, do you? I mean, everybody's got their iPod. Everybody's got that. And everybody's got their own silent disco in their head. All good. And then of course, even the, you know, you brought up Acid House earlier. I mean, that was brought on by ecstasy, really.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying, but drugs do all the way through the history of music, drugs have dictated sometimes what's going on. Psychedelia, blah, blah, blah.
Cocaine in the 80s.
Cocaine in the 80s banging techno beats. And weed, of course. And we always just smoke weed and hashish and stuff to get, you know, the best stuff that we could because it was about. And now I think the youth are condemned to smoking skunk, you know, which... I don't think he's very good. I personally, I still like a smoke from time to time. And even my black friends, they say, "Yeah, do you want this?" And I say, "What is it?" And they go, "We know you don't want to smoke the skunk." So, you know what I mean? So I just be careful with kids out there because it's, you know, I know everyone thinks they can handle it and everything, but
it's powerful, isn't it?
It's too powerful, you know, and I'm just saying it's a bit too powerful. It's too powerful for me.
Me
know?
Too,
it's,
dude.
And it's like... You do see people, it does can cause some mental illness, and I've seen that happen, and I've seen that with the other stuff as well. But what I'm saying is, it's more of a sitting at home sort of stuff, and not so much going out and
socialising, engaging.
So the bars have changed, drinks have changed, pints have changed. People don't really go out for a pint in a pub now, do you know what I mean? It's like beers and... You go out and get a bottle of Beck's that you could probably get for 80 pence down the cash and carry and pay £4.50 for it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's just changed. I mean, I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just saying it's a shame. Yeah.
It's a weird world. Even in my lifetime, I'm 32, and even in my lifetime, I've noticed a drastic change in, as you say, like community-based activity.
Yes.
Where I think it definitely still thrives is the north of England. And I was up in Grimsby recently to do a podcast up there, and... I did a chat with the lad from This Is England, that film,
the little ginger lad,
he's the main character. And everywhere we went, I spent the whole day with him, everywhere he went, everybody knew him, not because he's an actor and he's in a famous film, but because he's Tomo from down the road.
Yeah.
And we went to a fish and chip shop for lunch, and we went to a pub for a pint, and it felt like the community was so strong. And I feel like that when I go on tours to places like, say, even the bigger cities like Manchester or Newcastle, there's still, I think, of that.
We're lucky enough to move about.
Yeah.
And by far, the place we've toured by far the most is the UK. And I still like it. And if I don't do it, I kind of miss it, because I like to see... I don't want to really talk about Brexit, but I'm just saying, when that was all happening, we were on tour with Dead Men Walking, which is the thing we do with Jake Burns.
Yeah.
Kirk Brandon, me and Ruffy. And whatever our individual politics are, I would say we're all leaning definitely towards the left, you know. And, you know, songwriters. And you, when you're in Middlesbrough, looking out at an audience sitting there, old punks that are looking at you, and you're sitting there with three acoustic guitars and a sort of like a tambourine, you think they're going to kill you. But actually they come up in tears. And these are some of the toughest people I've ever met, you know, like looking. They love it because you take that song down, and but you realise that there's no money. There's always been a north and south divide, and
yeah,
the money's all it's all tough down here now, but it's all in the south. So yeah. I do like to travel, and I do like to talk to those people, and I do. Again, it all sounds very monochrome that you're sitting there. Oh yeah, they got no money. We've got to. It's not like that, because I'm just saying we don't even talk about that. We talk about the music, but it's good to see what's going on in those communities, and sometimes. You might be in a pub like that and you think, Christ, you know, you might, I've been in a pub in Middlesbrough and, you know, does anyone want a drink, and get everyone a drink, and then they don't take cards. It's quite, there's very few down here that don't do that. But, you know, because they just, they're not on that agenda. They're not on this, this whole thing that we're being sold, you know, that we get sold from the South, you know, this, that everything's better. We don't need cash. It's all plastic. Everything, we can get everything on credit. You know, it's been going on for years, and, you know, well, I'm totally up for modernization. I'm totally up for technology. But let's take everyone with us. You know what I mean? Not well, just the people that can afford it.
My friend raised a really interesting point to me the other day, which is that how many people now just don't carry cash. And so the homeless guy in the street who's asking people for change.
Well, someone said you could pay with a
PDQ machine. Yeah, they pull it out.
Apparently, I mean, I don't know whether I've not seen that yet.
But that will happen soon, won't it? It'll probably happen in my lifetime, where cash is gone, and then you're like, well, how do we help out these people that we can't give our change to if we don't have any?
I have to go back to my mattress underneath my mattress. But then you know what they do now? You know what they do? Obviously, like phase out the old coins, phase out the old tenors. So
yeah.
The people that have got all the black market money, you know, have to go and get to it somewhere. Except for the royal family, of course.
Yeah, they're on a whole different planet.
Yeah, a whole different planet. But let's not go there.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So, yeah. I guess a strange experience the other night.
Go on.
I met John Lydon for the first time
ever.
Yeah, well, not the first time. As I said to him when I met him, I got invited back to his place, his hotel, because and just to say hello, and not personally, but just as someone, and quite strange. And I brought up the fact that I said, last time I met you, and he went, whatever I did, whatever you say I didn't do. He said that. But he was nice actually, and I
had him on the show. We had a great chat.
Did you? Because yeah, well, let's talk about that in a minute. But I said, look, you know, last time I saw you, you had a Ruts, the cover of our first album in Virgin. I walked in behind you. You didn't know I was there. And you went, bunch of faggots. And he went, oh, dear. Yeah. He went, but he was all
busted.
Right. Got on all right with him. But interesting to see when he gets on his persona, you know, his media persona, he says some crazy things. That's
crazy
like,
things.
Just to annoy. I mean, but that's what he is.
Yeah,
but I got on right with him. I mean, we had some good conversations, you know. It wasn't,
and he's very considered and sensitive and thoughtful. I found in my experience with him, and we sat down for an hour like this, and we spoke about everything. And I just thought, wow, what a considerate, thoughtful guy. That he obviously puts on that persona as either a defence or an act. As you say,
I mean, he's a very sensitive guy. You know, we're not here to talk about him, obviously, but. I just said it was just strange the other night because it fits into everything we're talking about. Because he knows a lot of people that I know that are actually very good people. And I was surprised at myself because people said, do you want to come? It was 3 o'clock in the morning at Rebellion. And I said, do you want to come back? He's up for seeing some people and no a-holes, you know. So I suppose hopefully I fit into that category. And I was going, no, I don't want to meet him. Nah, you know, F him, because who do you think? I was a bit like that because I was a bit drunk. And then when I got there, I actually thought, Christ, I'm actually sitting here with, you know, arguably the king of punk, you know, because whatever you say about him, he did write Anarchy in the UK, which was changed my life, you know, and Ruffies in a way. So it was interesting. I don't know why I went off on that. But I'm just saying, I don't know why he says those things, because some of the things he says on the major media, like Morning Breakfast TV the other day, I was just like, oh God, really? Is he really pro Brexit? Because it's you know, it's kind of crazy. But he did say, he said, well, the working class have spoken, and I'm one of them. And I thought, well, you're not really, are you? Because you don't actually go to work, do you? I mean, you work hard, but you don't.
I think something like that is ingrained in your culture and your DNA, though. And
definitely born
like
into it. Me too.
But the characters that he surrounds himself with are still of that world. Do you know what I mean? I've been in those rooms, you know, with those people with him as well. There was a moment after a festival recently, the Camden Rocks Festival.
Yeah.
And the people that he surrounds himself with are of the streets.
Definitely. Boxing types on the streets, yeah. Let's not mention any names. But I got on all right with them guys as well. No problem. You know what I mean? Because I am from them. My dad was a docker and everything like that. But
yeah.
I don't know whether I'd use that phrase of being working, well, I'm working class, where I haven't really had to. I mean, I do go and work sometimes when necessary. I go and do things, but I've not had to go to a place of work, the same place of work for the last, you know, 30 years and just hoping to retire and then die, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. So, although I do think you can still comment, but I think what was missed with Brexit was really the working class have spoken, yes. But if you're going to have a referendum or a vote and it's a sham,
yeah.
Because, you know, it'd be like you saying, what record do you prefer, the Ramones? What should I play now, the Ramones? Or should I play Public Image, two of my favourite records? And I'll say, okay, well, tonight let's play Public Image. I've voted. And then you play something by The Clash. It's just like, it's just bringing it down to that. They was, you know, when you go to, I was in Middlesbrough at the time and all that was going on, and they were being sold a lie, which is,
they were hoodwinked, yeah.
They were,
well, we all were.
And which has come to be proven, you know, and
yeah,
I just
the media again, isn't it?
I don't think that should still be going on.
No way,
you know, that kind of I'm sitting there with Lydon talking about, you know, who would you vote for? Well, he said, well, I, you know, no one, and I said, well, yeah. I'd vote for someone that will actually have the people of the good of the people at their heart. And I don't think any of them do, because I think they have to become liars as part of the job.
Do you think we can ever reach a position where people in political power actually do genuinely care about the people? Do you think that day will ever arrive?
I think even if, no.
No?
I think even if they start,
they get
even if they start, they
say.
Have to be corrupt. Well, it's even further than that, because it's not just corrupt and they become these evil people. If you've ever tried to do a cause, you start off with the cause. Even Rock Against Racism is like, you start off working within that cause. And then to push your agenda through, you sometimes have to tell a porcupine.
Concessions.
So,
need
you know,
to be made
you've already
as well.
Tainted, if you see what I mean. And I think that doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but, you know, it's very difficult. So, just the politics, very weird thing. You know, music is better than politics. I said to John Lydon, yeah, meaning, did you ever think of running for Parliament? I said, did you ever? He went, no. He knew what question it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't even interviewing. We were just chatting. You know, but, anyway, sort of.
You're happy you met him, though, yeah?
I was over the moon, yeah. Over the moon. And then the next thing I saw that interview with, what's his face?
Piers Morgan.
Yeah, and yeah. I thought, well, you know, you just could have been more bomb. Eloquent there. But he is a spokesman and he does whatever.
He does what he does. Can I ask you, obviously, you know, say a song like Babylon's Burning, that was a top five hit, right? Or top ten?
Top seven. Top ten, number seven.
And to think of a song like that, obviously, we don't have shows like Top of the Pops anymore, but to think of a song like that today being in the mainstream pop charts is almost unthinkable, which is kind of weird, isn't it? And worrying.
Well, I liken it to Silver Machine by Hawkwind. You know, at the time, you could get records. I'm not saying that's politically. I know where you're going.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's just say there were great
records.
You can
sneak them in.
Great records in the charts. You know, the Kinks, the Who and stuff like that. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But you know, we had that. Something I said was the next one. Third one was Jar War, and it didn't get banned. But we were on tour, and it got played. I think Dave Lee Travis, the Hairy Monster, more ways than one. It played it. So we went, yeah, it's getting played on the radio. But we were quite naive, and then. Radio silence, because everyone found out. I think Malcolm did an interview and said it was about the Southall riots. And how are you going to get played on the radio even then doing that? So I can't see that. I got my daughter's 17, so she listens to stuff. But of course, when I tell her what we were singing about, it's kind of crazy, you know. It's I suppose pop is short for popular, which popular means it's popular because people
it reflects
it
whatever's popular in that time period.
Yeah, so you already raised two major factors. A, the chart, which doesn't really exist. Top of the Pops doesn't exist. And sales, which doesn't exist either. So, you know, it's not based on that anymore. So could it happen again? No, because like, Babylon's Burning sold like 230,000. Not that we got any money for it, but 230,000. And we didn't even get a silver disc for that. And, you know, because I think that was silver. Gold was 500, platinum was 1 million. Now I think platinum is something like 100,000.
100,000, probably,
which is,
yeah.
Know, it's just changing. And again, I'm up for the technology. Download stuff for nothing if you have to, but try and find the best quality so you can actually listen to what the hell, all the work everybody puts into the making the records, and big speakers in the studio. It's all going, isn't it, you know?
It is.
I've just set up my little studio at home. It's nothing much. I mean, it's just a laptop and a couple of sort of cranky old speakers I had in a cupboard sometimes. So I've got speakers all over the house now again. I could make a record in there probably, or take it to someone to make it into a record. It's just about the songs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Grime came along. It was called Grime. And God, when was that start? Like 10 years ago,
I'd say, yeah.
And Dubby was doing a bit with various things. And then, as you know, dubstep, you get all these genres and then they go. Punk was the same. And then some of them come back as the umbrella genre. Mm-hmm. And so we've been through all this new beat and whatever you call it. And then grime's come back as the sort of the umbrella, hasn't it? It's still grime. And yeah, there was some good stuff, man. But and I've heard some really good stuff. But yeah, the poppy stuff, I suppose, don't really cut it. I mean, you got, I I remember, again, a while ago, Tiny Temper was doing it. It was quite, even Dizzy Rascal, it's quite exciting. But they quickly got assimilated, really, into, well, I hate to upset you boys if you listen to this, but I mean, it's, I've been there myself, get assimilated into being a pop star and how you're getting treated. So therefore, you can't talk about anything anymore. So you better stay, get back to your roots. And if you've got the power to try and change something, you can still make hit records as well. But on your albums, put a few messages and let's try and talk about unity and getting some stuff still going. We still want to do People Unite, which was the Mystery and Roots' label that we put in a rut on the first record. And that still remains our message, People Unite, because it's very simple, because you'd have to be quite bad to be in the pub and go like, well, I don't want people to unite. You know, it's a very simple
It's a strange
message.
Thing to stand against, isn't it?
It's a strange thing to stand against. And I'm always going on about pub politics because people talk about pub, you know, in what well, they used to anyway, talk about politics in pubs and they don't know what it's all about at all because, you know.
I think when we're distracted as well and divided, that's obviously when it's easier to be sold bullshit like Brexit. And that's why the media and the government want to keep us divided and distracted, isn't it?
Well, you know, if Brexit does go through and it went through all really great, and I would be the first to say, well, I didn't really want it, but you know what, we're all better off, and you know, more importantly, the person in the street is better off. But you know that's not going to happen. You just know that's, you know, I knew that was not going to happen. Whatever you vote for, and you got a great thing in this country, you got an outdated voting system, and people, that's the only power people have got. So you give it to them. And it was a genius move on behalf of government, really. Okay, let's have a referendum. We never had one of those for years. And everyone, right, we've got something to say. And basically, if I said to you, you know, what do you think of that album? You say, great. And then I asked, you know, some bloke in the pub that obviously doesn't like that sort of music. He's going to say something because I've given him the opportunity to have a freedom of, but I'm not interested in what he's got to say because he doesn't listen to that sort of music. So it's kind of referendum. Yeah, the vote for the people. But it's not because you've just been... So this is what's on offer. And actually what they've said is not on offer. So it's I'm pissed off with that, really, because I can't believe we fell for it.
I know, man.
I can't believe we fell for it because both Ruffy and I just thought, you know, and most of my friends are pro-unity and pro... He lived in Paris for a bit. It was the best thing I ever did, you know. It's like... Meet other cultures, whether you like them or not. It's just meet them. And you can't say that this culture is this, or this culture, or this colour is this. You can't say it because it's just ridiculous because they're people, you know. So you're going to be sitting there. And, you know, we came a long way in this country, and I, with that unity thing. And I thought it was a positive force and everything was going to change. And unfortunately, it hasn't. There's, you know, and then that causes hatred. And there's going to be another country that takes the flak, and it could be Somalia. Everybody's got something to say against somebody, haven't they? We're an island race, but it's like that the world over, really. So I'm not despairing.
Maybe it's darkest before the dawn, though, and maybe with Trump in power and Brexit happening, maybe finally that awakening will start to kick in again and people will actually go, whoa, hold on. Well, this is bad. We need to do things on a drastic and... You know,
well, I think what John Lydon was
organized saying, scale
sending the clowns. Oh, they're already here.
Yeah,
you know, so it's kind of like that, really. So, in a way, how much more ridiculous can it get? I don't know whether it's my age. I hope not. But just to look at politics, how it's gone, never really trusted them, but now it's just got kind of ridiculous. So, I don't think the youth, whoever they are, really care about it. It's beyond them, isn't it? I mean, you know, they got everything they want, really. You know, it is interesting when people take to the streets and stuff like that. It's never been my thing. I've done a bit of it, but you know, it is good.
There seems to be a lot of that happening at the moment.
Well, that's good. It's going to be. It's
Did you see the numbers that protested the Trump visit? How many people?
Which was impressive.
He's like, I didn't feel welcome. No shit.
Well, the fact that he said I didn't feel welcome is a small victory.
Yeah.
Because actually for that, I mean, you know, he's Mr. Thumbs, isn't he? He just says what the first thing that comes into his head. So
yep.
I'm glad that that actually got reported.
Yeah.
That I actually said that. Yeah, it was, we don't want you here. You know what I mean? But he doesn't want us there either. So.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about, someone said, there's this thing, punk rock bowling in
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I'd love to get out of there.
It sounds fun. But, you know, to get there now, it's so, they just don't want anybody in that country, you know.
You mean in terms of trying to get the working visa?
Yeah, working visa and everything. And it used to be difficult.
But now it's like near impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And financially, it just doesn't make enough sense to even do it.
Well, can't someone else be the singer? Isn't there an American guy that can sing the lyrics to Music Must Destroy? Well, if he did, he'd probably get shot, wouldn't he? Yeah. We're not that militant, are we, really? I mean, we're just doing what we were singing Babylon's Burning, Malcolm was, and I'm going to be singing it again now. And, we're still a bit angry about it all. And,
anger's an energy. Well, Johnny said it.
He's taken over this interview.
Yeah, isn't he?
But it is about, you know, I know he provides a good link from our past to our future, you know, as does this tour. We do that, and we're starting to write new songs now. I've got loads of songs, actually, just trying to put them together. So the other end of this tour, we'll make another album.
And where are you going to go next?
What do you mean?
Musically, because obviously you did Rhythm Collision 2 and then you did Music Must Destroy.
Are you going to combine those two
and go for the sweet spot
like
in the middle?
I'd like to put a reggae vibe on it, but
keeping down that guitar, rock-driven.
I think it's going to be more like Music Must Destroy
Part
2. But I don't know. See, Music Must Destroy, again, it wasn't a concept. It was those songs just came out. And some of it from jamming. I write a lot of songs now on acoustic guitar, but there's not much on there that's like that. But there are some bits. But, you know, I'm really into songs now, which I think before I was into bass lines.
And sounds.
So I'm going to go back to bass lines because I really like a good bass line. And but I do like chords, you know, so I've gone in the middle eight, which I don't think I used to bother about too much before. But, you know, there's different days with the ruts, because we used to just get in there. And Foxy used to come up with a riff, or I'd come up with a riff, and then he'd just put the second riff on, and then Malcolm. It was so easy. But so I think it's going to be, be like that. I think things change all the time. So I'm going to write the songs. We're going to write the songs. I'm going to write my sort of songs. Other people are going to bring in what they've got, add to what I've got, we'll add to what they've got. And I don't mind recording it now, but I don't want to mix it until it's going to be released, because the sound's changed, vibe changes, you know, the militancy of a mix changes, you know. I think that's very important. I don't want to have something that's, as they call it, in the can for like 3 years, because by the time, in 3 years' time, there won't be any point in releasing anything anyway, cause there's hardly any music channels left or anything. But I'm not bemoaning that. We'll just carry on because we have to, you know.
And because it makes you happy and you love it still.
I still love it. And
it's amazing as well, because there's so few bands. I mean, well, actually, there's a fair few bands of that era around and still doing it. And I think you should celebrate a record like that on a landmark birthday like that.
Well, that's good. It's good. I don't want to be cheap, and I don't want to just be so obvious. But this is the only year we can do it. And it's been suggested before, and I sort of said, well, I'm not, I'm not Malcolm, and I'm not doing this. But I think, this is the only year we can do it. So did we do it, or did we not do it? And I think people are quite excited about it. So I've been proved wrong many times. I mean, I was proved wrong on that last album that I could even do it, you know, that just for me personally, be the singer and be the main lyricist. I didn't really think I had that in me, because, you know, I won't say it was beaten out of me, but poetry wasn't the biggest word on my parents' lips, you know. Why don't you be a poet?
Yeah.
But anyway, I sort of become a reluctant poet, I suppose. As far as what comes next, I mean, I can't help but I woke up at 2 o'clock this morning with a load of lyrics. If that happens, then what are you going to do? You know, just so there's no point. Just go back to sleep. Well, you can't really. So you've got to write it down, even if they end up on a scrap of paper on the floor or on your phone. But the thing is, if you can make a bit more effort and put it into a great song and get a power of a band behind it, then isn't this what it's all about? That's why you're still interviewing people, because you give a fuck, you know what I mean? And people out there actually do. There's some good new bands about, and your idols are good, you know what I mean? You know, Fat White Family are good. There's some bands that are actually doing some new stuff, and I know they're kind of old hat now, the idols, but they're not. But I like their anger and their point of view. You know, it's just sort of normal. So, maybe, yeah, the idols in the charts. So maybe we will have this.
There's a band called The Blinders. Have you heard them? You should check them out. They're really good. Really good.
Okay, but that's good. I'd like to set up. Well, I know some young people, luckily, who introduced me to these things, or generally meet members of these bands along the way. The Slaves, for example, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he put in that Babylon's Burning was one of in his top 10, and so that made me listen to The Slaves. I mean, I had heard some of the stuff, and I thought, but Ruffy will ring me up and say, have you seen it? You know, send me a thing, because it's important. And that goes for hip-hop. It could be, he'll also send me a great, have you heard it? You know, Trent Muller, a bit old hat now, but like house stuff. But I mean, a track like that, or, you know, back in the day, Nirvana, It Smells Like Teen Spirit. If one of us hears that, have you heard that?
Still getting switched on,
because it's very, very important to keep it. And that can go for any genre. It doesn't matter. That can
Like heard this, the Prodigy, the Streets, when you hear bands like that.
All
doing
those
really
things that
stuff.
Come along and you thought, well, they're doing something new. And I don't say we're doing something new. I'm just saying we're doing something.
Yes, we are. Mate,
that's great. Brilliant.
Absolute pleasure to see you, as always. Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Keep the faith, Matt. Love this.
Always. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.